This is my second interview with Molly Steinholz. The date of this recording is March 5th, 1974. This interview was conducted in Molly's home. The interviewer is Taffy Viner.
How far did I write to tell you about the work was in the union?
Well, let's just start with the beginning of it. And when did you first?
Who is Taffy Viner?
How far did I write to tell you about the work was in the union?
Well, let's just start with the beginning of it. And when did you first get involved in the union?
Oh, I got involved in the union. I joined the union in 1913. And let's see, I arrived here in July 1913, July the 22nd. You know, 28, I don't remember, you know, so many years. So then my sister got me the job at Hardship New Max, and I worked there. I had to join the Amalgamated Clothing Workers of America. And that time juice was only a dollar and a half a month, you see. So I joined them. And I think they charged me $3 to join the union. And then I worked for them about 4 years or so. Then they made me chair lady of my section. About 3 years after I was working there, I became a chair lady of my section. I was an armhole baster, you know, basting the armholes around there, based on the collars. And the animal based it. So then I worked it over there for about animal basting. I was an animal baster after I joined them. See, after I joined Hardship New Max. But the foreman, he was a very nice Jewish man. Mm-hmm. And he says, Molly, I think I can make a tailor out of you if you give me time. See? I said, all right, just show me what you want and I'll do it, you know. So he showed me first, started making armholes. Then he showed me how to baste the collars and everything else. And I used to baste the armholes all around with the canvas. And then I used to baste up the collars. Not the top collar, but the bottom collar. And then they used to go to the top man, the man that based on the top collars, you know, the collars used to be separate. And so I did that. And all around, I worked there for about, I think about 8 years at Hardship New Max.
Who first told you about the union, though?
Well, they had a chairman of the union. It was an worker. He used to be a presser, I think.
Uh-huh.
I think a presser. And he says, Molly, you want to take care of your section? I said, certainly, anytime you want me to. Because I was a union girl, see? So he says, all right. So I took so you want to be chair lady? You'll collect the dues from each and every one of them. And then I'll give you a receipt. And then I report, I reported to the chairman. I was a chair lady only on my section.
And how many people were?
Oh, we were about seven times seven tables, and on each table I think was 14. But I was the only Jewish girl. And then there were, another one came in, you know. And then some Italian and some Croatian, and they taught me the languages right along. And I had an Italian woman. She was a normal based student. She really liked me. So in fact, she invited me to her house, and she said, "You come and visit me, and I'll cook a good dinner for you. You know, Italian dinner." And she had a brother. She said, my brother's going to take you out to a show and all that. I said, fine. So he did. He took me to a show and everything else. And she was a very nice lady because we were talking to each other, and she helped me out a lot, you know. So a few times I was by her house. I was invited as a young girl, you know, and this and that. So fine. Then one day her brother says, would you like to go to a show with me? And I said, certainly, why not? You know, fun. He took me to show, and he took me out for supper, and enjoyed. And then he brought me home, and everything was fine. But then I was working piece work. See, so I worked on my own time. So I used to come to work. I was supposed to be there 8 o'clock in the morning, and we used to work till 4:30, 5 o'clock, something like that. I don't remember exactly. All right, so. And Saturday we were off a half a day. We never worked on Sundays. The thing was supposed to be more urgent, so we worked overtime, they call it. So for the overtime, they used to pay us time and a half, you know, mm-hmm. so much and so much.
How much were your wages at this time?
Well, by that time I was making, I think it was $16 a week, you know, cash money. They pay us all by cash. They used to bring the payroll in a little envelope, and they passed it on every week so much here. In fact, while I was working piecework, how many coupons I tore off from my paper, you know, from the, they used to have a big tail on it. So the armor base of this one, finish it, we go to the other side. So I worked there, but in 1918, I had the Spanish influenza. I was very sick, but I was in the hospital for about 14 or 15 days because I had a high fever for the 1918, yeah. So I stayed away for a while, so I came back, and I couldn't get along with the girls because I had to watch them. Sometimes they used to work on the lunch hour, but we used to get a half, 3/4 of an hour for lunch. So I used to watch him. I said, you can't work lunchtime. That's the, I was a chairlady, you see. So they kind of got me teased here and there, and teased me here and there. So I decided, so I talked it over with my older sister. She was working for her Jeff and Max too, I told you that. She was working on special machines. So, and I came back, so I says to the former Mr. Sepkin was his name, nice Jewish man. He said, Molly, what's the matter? I said, look, they don't mind me, and I didn't want them to work overtime on lunch hour. After all, you know, you got the 3 quarters of an hour lunch, you got to rest, right? So we were arguing and arguing with them girls, and I was arguing, so one girl picks out the scissors and she wanted to hit me. Because I interfered, you know. So somehow I went to the manager, so his name, I forgot what his name was, and I told him, he says, well, you're a good chair lady. And because they didn't like the union very well anyway. But you know, as a union, we were organized after all. You know, I used to go to the union meetings, and the chairman was there. He was a nice Jewish fellow, too, the chairman.
How often were the union meetings?
Oh, we used to go probably about once a month or so, and to see the main figures. You know, there was one Italian man, and his name I forgot. So I figured this way. I worked so long, the heck with them, and I had a brother-in-law. He was a tailor. So he worked in the police. He was a sawyer by hand too. He says, if you want a job, I'll take you over to Goldstein. His name was Goldstein. I don't remember his first name. So I went there to work, and I worked there for a while. And I used to pay my dues, but he never liked union help, you know. But I used to pay my dues to the union. The union was, at that time, they had an office on Milwaukee Avenue near Damon. It used to be the name of Ruby Street, and now it's Damon Avenue. So I was laughing, he said. So anyhow, when I started work for Mr. Goldstein, I think maybe I told you, I don't remember if I did, yeah. So he says, you want to work? You want to be a collar baster? I said, yeah, I can baste anything, you know. So he put me, he said, you come to our shop. My brother was working there, yeah. And he said, you come with me, because my brother knew Mr. Goldstein well. So I went and I got a job, and he paid me $22.50 a week. So I worked there about 2 years, you know. I think so. Maybe it was 2 years or I don't remember, something like that. But then he went, see, he didn't want to have organized help. Then he says, you want to go with us to Wisconsin State somewhere, or Michigan, I don't remember which state. So the man from the union told me, if Mr. Goldstein wants to take you, he says, you go ahead and try and organize the girls. So he found out and he didn't want to take me. You know, I was a strong union girl and all that. So I said, all right, you don't want to take me? I said, I don't care, I'll get a job. As a hand worker, because they wouldn't teach me on the machines to work, because I was a good hand worker. So he said, no, Molly, you're not going to go. I said, you don't want me to go? So I won't go. I didn't care. So I went and I got a job working for somebody else, Edenheimer and Stein, and I was based in college. You know, I was not particular, hand work. So I worked for Edenheimer and Stein, And I met a woman, and she was my husband's aunt. But I knew her well, see. So her name was Becky. She dressed in peace. She's dead now. I said, Becky said to me, "You want to work for Edenheimer and Stein?" I said, "Well, as long as I can get paid." So they paid me $27.50 a week. You understand? And then I don't know what was with Edenheimer and Stein. Something else happened. I don't remember exactly, but either they were going out of business or they were something and what went anyhow. So I went and I got another job in the shop as a collar baster. You know, those collars on the men's clothes. So I was working and I said, well, if you want me to work there, it will have to be $32.50 a week. So everything, naturally, the longer you work. So I was working there. I was getting $32.50 a week. So finally, there was a Polish girl, you know, and I tried to tell her. I said, why are you working like this? I said, why don't you belong to the union? You know, so she started to tell me this and that, because I learned how to speak Polish, you know, while I was in this country. I didn't know anything about Poland from Russia. I only spoke Russian. So a little bit I learned Polish and I learned Lithuanian and Croatian, Italian, a lot of words that I knew. You know, the waiter that worked with me at Hartz and Mars, she always used to teach me how to talk Italian. All right. So this, in the meantime, while I was working there, somehow, the foreman was a Jewish man, Willie. I remember him. Oh, yes. So he came up to me. He said, how dare you go to tell this girl she should join the union? I said, well, she should join the union. After all, we all belong to the union. And it was a non-union shop, you know. They always looked for anything to be against the union. And I was very strongly for the amalgamated clothing workers. So he found out, so he started to give me an argument. And he says, and I was getting $32.50 a week over there already. So I said to him, well, then the main foreman or boss came up to me. He says, you know, Molly, you're talking too much. I said, what did I say? He says, to this young woman you mentioned something. I said, well, you know, I have a right to fire you. I said, you don't scare me at all. If you're going to fire me, I'll quit. So I took my scissors and I said goodbye. And I said, you're not going to fire me, I'm going to quit. So I went to the union and I went down. And so what did I do? I quit. So he said, you go downstairs and get your check. So I went in the office, in the factory. And then I said, well, you owe me so much money. I said, I want my pay. So she paid me all. And the meantime, I got a got another job on Division Street in Chicago, and I was working there for a while. And I always worked week work. I didn't want piecework work, because the piecework, you know, you have to hustle. All right, I thought I made $32.50 a week. That time was a lot of money, you know. And I saved some more and something. And I stayed. Then in 1921, I moved to my older sister, lived with one of my cousins on Garfield Boulevard. It's like 55th Street. But the name was Garfield Boulevard. And I stayed there with them and I was working, and I used to go, I got myself a job, and I was making $45 a week. And I used to travel with Ashland Avenue to Division, and then to Division, I used to take Division Street where I was working, and I was making $45 a week. You understand?
Did they know you were part of the union?
Yeah, but it was a union shop. Oh. They had a chairman, a union, it was a union shop. And I was basting armholes, collars, whatever I needed, all by hand, because they never taught me on the machine. They were afraid. I was a very good hand girl, mm-hmm. You know, working hard.
Were you making more money because you were a part of the union or because you...
No, I was already in the union, and there was a union shop and everything, and I worked there. And I worked there until... what happened was my husband's aunt was working there too, you know, people. So one day I knew my husband way about 6 years before I married him, because my sister-in-law was my friend, you know, and all around there, and his mother always liked me. So I said, they were going out of business or something. So I said, well, I don't know. If you can't keep no help, I said, it doesn't matter. Then later on, I got engaged to my husband. It was 1922. And we were going to get married. And we owned, my husband owned the building with his mother. You know, he was... because that was our favorite son. So I said, you get a three-story house, but no steam heat, it was furnace heat. So I moved on the second floor. Then we were going around for a while, and my husband brought me a diamond ring, which I still own, and I said to this and that, and then he says, well, I tried to get a job, you know, while I was off. So I went to a few places. They didn't want to hire me because they all said the only thing was open. See, the depression was coming in already, you know. So he said to me, tags to put on the coat. I'll give you $15 a week. I said, no, sir, I'm not going to work for $15 a week. So my husband... we were supposed to get married earlier, but we were waiting. After that, we heard from my folks, because we didn't hear from them. I left in 1913. The First World War was in 1914. And then they had to leave town, and then we didn't hear anything. So then we received a letter. My brothers, they remembered my brother's, my older brother's address. So he got a letter. So the letter was written, I guess, in Jewish, I'm sure. So when he called up that we got a letter, so my sister Fanny, the one lives in Chicago, that's my older sister, and my older brother lived there. And my brother that was a year and a half older than me, he was married already. He was, during the war, he was working in the shipyard in Philadelphia, you see. In the meantime, she had a little girl. So I went and I lived with my sister. So my husband asked me if I wanted to go study, you know. I did like him all the time, but I was used to go out with other girls too, you know. So then he came over on a Saturday night, then my husband said, well, if you don't want to get a job, you don't have to. I had already saved up $500, my own. And I paid my sister, when I moved to her house, I used to give her a few dollars a week. But then I didn't work, so he said, don't worry. You want to pay her? She'll keep you if she wants to. So I told Fanny, my sister, I said, Fanny, I don't want to work for $15 a week. The car for alone won't cost me that much to travel. Because I already moved on Garfield Boulevard near Ashland Avenue in Chicago. So she said, oh, don't worry about it, don't worry about it. And my sister, in the meantime, my sister, she lived with my cousin. They got a three-bedroom apartment. And one bedroom was like empty, you know, like little things. So my sister had a bedroom. And my cousin Rose had a bedroom. Rose Sidechair is her name. She's my first cousin. And we got along fine, real nice. And then I slept with Sidechair's daughter. We like roommates, you know. She was much younger than me. She was a little girl yet. I think she was going to first grade or so. So then my husband came and was telling me. And he really liked the children. He liked the children, see. Then my cousin had a little girl. Her name was Frances, you know. So he used to come and bring her things. She always loved toys, things like that. So he did. And then we decided to get married. It was in 1922. So when the first time when we heard from my folks, we wrote them. And we were going to wait. That when they come, I already had my apartment ready. You know what I mean? All this. The first time my husband said, well, we'll get married in August. All right, we already have fixed up the apartments and everything else. And I said, well, as soon as I hear from my folks, I'd love to have them come in. And we waited practically over a year for that. So then we lost track of them. What I think it was, they missed the visa business in Russia at that time. The communists were already in, after the revolution, you know, then the communists came in. So naturally they were all separated. They didn't know from each other. And I have a brother younger than I am, a year and a half. He was married, and I didn't know. Then they wrote to me that my brother Mota is married and he had three children. He had two girls and a boy, you know, son. So all right, so that's how it was in 19, then we were going to be married in January 1920, between 22 and 23. Again, we decided to wait. And then I couldn't get a job, so my husband said, don't worry. I'll give you spending money, whatever you want. And if you can't get no job, don't worry. You understand? He gave me spending money, whatever I want. And my sister said, if you don't work, you don't have to pay me. I'll take care of you. Right? That's how it was. So we got engaged in 1922. In March was 1922. So we went all the way 1922, practically up to 1923. in May the 27th. That's when we decided to get married. So I says to my husband, I says, you and I will arrange the wedding ourselves. I had my older brother and sister, and we went, and I took out of $200 from the bank, and I said, here's $200. 1923, things were not so expensive like now. Certain things were expensive. And he said, so we went on Division in Milwaukee Avenue, that's a Jewish neighborhood, and it was a restaurant. And here I didn't hear from my folks, so he said, no, you're waiting. You want to arrange the wedding? So we went, both of us. So I gave him $200. I said, we'll arrange the wedding and we'll invite as many friends I have. And relatives, I only had my sister and my two brothers and my sister-in-law. So everything was arranged, and we arranged the supper, catered, you know. And then my older brother said to me, he was kind of angry, I don't know why, but he said he wasn't going to come to the wedding. I said, well, if you don't want to come to the wedding, I said, believe me, I'm not going to send no chauffeur after you. Just like that, I told him. I was independent too, you know. So then somehow he waited, you know, the day, and then we went to the restaurant. We decided May the 27th, 1923, we're going to get married. So according to Jewish tradition, we call it in the Jewish Shabbos Nach Shavuos. Shavuos, you know what Shavuos is. First is Easter, and that's another holiday. You eat mostly meat, no meat, not milk, you know, meat, everything is something like that. They call it Shavuos. So that's the date came out in 1923, May the 27th was Shabbos after Shavuos, you know. Certain weeks you have to wait. So all right, so we arranged it, we went and we ordered my wedding. Our wedding, I mean, and we gave him a deposit, and I told him that we're going to get married Shabbos Nach Shavuos. That's in Jewish. That's where you say, Saturday night or whatever you call it. And then we went and we arranged the rabbi that married my brother. He married me too. His name was Bloom, I think. Yeah. And he was one of those kind of people that used to circumcise the boys too. He was a religious rabbi, but he was very handy in all that stuff. So I said, okay. So we ordered him to be our ceremony, and but my younger sister-in-law and her husband, now it's her husband, she was my bridesmaid and a good friend of mine, and another boy that was a good friend with my husband and me. So they were our ushers. I think I showed you the picture in my room. I said, so they were, and my niece at the time was 5 years old, so she was my flower girl. And to the wedding, oh yeah, then my brother kind of softened up a little bit, and he came over to the house and took us to the ceremony, to the restaurant, to the hall, whatever you call it. And he brought a case of liquor with him. It was prohibition time too that time, yes. But he had liquor, yeah.
How did he get
it? I don't know, I never asked him. But so he brought it, good. Otherwise I would have bought it, but he told me that he came to my house with his car, and we already had a car rented for me and my husband to go from our house. I got dressed in my own flat. I had my own home, furnished. And a friend of mine used to live with me. We were good girlfriends too. And she said, I said, well, if you want to live with me, I said, I'll tell you what you do. Buy yourself a bedroom set, and you live. And we bought our own bedroom set. And I had a two-bedroom apartment. So she said, fine, you know. And she stayed, and she worked, and her husband worked, because they weren't pretty good off yet, you know. And then he moved in ahead of time. I said, go ahead, whatever you want to pay me, it's all right with me. And my mother-in-law used to make for them meals. So they used to eat by her suppers. And lunch, whatever she wanted to, she fixed her own lunches, you know. So that's how it happened, that and that's how we got married. And my brother came that time, and he came to the wedding, you know. So, and then he went around and he said, oh, I made Molly a wedding. I said, came to me, I said, why should you go around talking that you made my wedding, which you didn't? Because we paid for everything, even the, you know, the body canopies, the rabbi, we paid him, Rabbi Bloom, whatever his name was, Bloom, I think, yeah. And so, all right, so that's how it was. So we got married, and my husband was in business at the time, you know.
What kind of business?
He was manufacturing ladies' dresses and coats, something like that.
Was it his business or was he working?
No, he was working with his uncle partners in business. And me, here and there, I went to South Haven, Michigan for a couple of weeks. Then I got a letter from my sister, Fanny, my older sister. She said, Molly, you better come home because the folks are coming in from Chicago. I mean, from Russia. Both my father and mother came with six children. Four of us were here, and the two were left in Russia. My brother older than me, and my sister was older than younger than my brother. So between the two of us was 3 years the difference. My brother was older than me, younger than me a year and a half, and my sister was younger than my brother a year and a half. My brother's name was Mote, that's what they call him in Jewish, and my sister's name was Anna. In America, we are named her Anna, but in Russian, her name was Nechamke. You know, Chamke is Anna, Chane, so it's Anna. So when, that's how things happened that time. So when we heard that my folks are on the way coming in, they got some kind of a visa that time. So they came, you know what I mean? And my sister and brother, my older sister, my brother was older than her, so they rented an apartment on August Street near Rockwell in Chicago. And she said, Molly, you better come home because we have to arrange, the folks are coming in from Russia. I said, gee, oh really? I said, so I was going on my honeymoon there in South Haven, Michigan. So we went there. I stayed there about 2 weeks with my husband and my aunt for the time, my uncle on his side, his family. And we stayed there, and then my girlfriend came over to stay there, Jeanette. And she was very close with me too. So we stayed there. And so naturally we were coming back home. So we came back to Chicago, and we got the three-bedroom house for the family, for my father, my mother, and six children. So they placed them, you know, here and there. And my sister said to me, Molly, you have to come every day. And not, she said, for a month you'll stay with them and teach them how to operate the stove or the gas or things like that. I said, fine. So I stayed with them for a month, you know. And then they came in 1923, August 1923. And I was married to them maybe about, but I got married the 27th, they came in August. But I think I was married about 2.5 months or so. So in the meantime, I started to pregnant with my first boy. His name is Marvin. I showed you the picture of him. So I said to my mother, I said, Ma, she said, didn't get my period, so natural. So my mother said to me, don't worry. So, you know, in Jewish they say, does I mean glick, you know what I mean. Yeah. That means you should be lucky, you know, like that. So I said, oh, darn, and so it was in August, you know, and I was staying with them for about 5 weeks. I stayed there every day, and I showed them how to do cooking and the shopping and everything, and I teach them in Jewish, and I spoke to them in Jewish. I said, and I haven't seen my folks for 10 years. I left in 1913, they came in 1923. So I said to them, I'll stay as long as I can. That's all. And I had my apartment where I lived. My mother lived downstairs and I lived on the second floor. It was like they call it here furnace heat, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the third floor was rented, was a three-story building. And that's how things happened. So then my husband's aunt, she had a house. She used to live on Francis Place. And this girl that moved in my apartment, we were very nice, close friends together. She says, I'll tell you what, if you want to get an apartment, and my aunt had a three-story building on Francis Place in Chicago. It's near Kedzie Avenue, someplace around there, California, Kedzie, I don't remember. So we rented the apartment, and my lady friend was living with me, but she began to pregnant too, and she was married before me. So naturally we lived there for about 1 year. And I said, look, Ruta, you're going to have a child, I'm going to have a child, and two children in one house, it can be done, you know. So we were talking like this. So my brother had a building on, let's say, on Chicago Avenue in Monticello. One apartment on the first floor. He says, Mal, if you want to move there, I'll let you off some of the rent. Okay. So I took that apartment because the rent was high. He says, I'll let you off the rent if you want to move there. And my aunt, my husband's aunt, Becky, she was still staying with my aunt, other aunt, but they couldn't get along. So I says to Becky, if you want, I says, move in with me. And it'll be, you know, there'll be peace in the family, which she did, see? But later on, as we lived there, and my boy was born, and my aunt was working, Becky, that other, she had another aunt to my husband, and she was working, and then in the evening she used to come, and I'd cook the dinners, and she'd eat, and then she'd pay me a certain amount of money. So in the meantime, everything together, you know, here and there. So I lived there for a while. And what happened was, I couldn't get along with her for a while, you know. And my mother was sick. She got pneumonia. My brother put her in the hospital. And in the Mount Sinai, there's a Mount Sinai hospital in Chicago too. And I think she had pneumonia or something. And then they found out that she was diabetic. They didn't know at first. So I took my mother in to me, and I said, Ma, if you want to stay with me, it's okay. I said, Becky's going to bother you. I said, you tell me. But she's working, so my mother stayed with me for a while in that house, you know. And I didn't take no money from my mother because they couldn't afford it. My father was working the time with my brother. He gave him something, spending money, whatever it was, see, in that time. And then that's how we went along. And then my mother, so then my mother, my brother got her an apartment on Palmer Square. Spalding, right there near Palmer, Spalding and Palmer. So my mother was, they were living there, my brother was her favorite son. You know, you have sometimes your favorite people. So he'd go to her, and we lived that time, then my brother came to me and he said, look, I know it's hard for you. If you want it, he says, I'll give you a room, an apartment on, Humboldt Boulevard. And you should, I'll let you off a cheaper rent, you know, like this. And he says, you will collect the rent from all the neighbors, whatever you want to do. And I already had my second child, Sylvia was born. So this and that, and all around together. So then somehow we managed. Then I took sick again, I had a bad cold. So Sylvie was small yet, you know. But my mother-in-law, then my father-in-law died before I had my first son, because he's named after my father-in-law. In Jewish, his name was Moshe, but he translated him for Marvin, you know. So, okay. And then my daughter Sylvie was born. It's named after my grandmother, my mother's mother. So my mother was happy that I named Sylvie after her mother, because I remembered my grandmother very well. I was small, but I remembered her. So we got the... After we lived on Monticello, so my husband had about $4,000 saved up, because him and his mother were buying property and selling. See, they both worked together, because he was her favorite son and this and that. So they sold one building, and then they sold another building on Division Street, so they made little money. So then they decided, so my mother said to him, we bought a car. Then depression came in. And my husband was sick, he had to go to Rochester, Minnesota, he had stomach trouble. So one doctor told him he's got a cancer, so he got scared. So my brother came to me and he says, Molly, what do you want to do? You know, he says, well, I can travel with him, but I got small children after all. You know, Marvin was a baby, and there I was with Sylvia. So then he gave me some money. He says, here's a buy him a ticket, and his mother went to him to Rochester, Minnesota. So what did they found out? That he had what they call it, nervous stomach or something. But he used to be very sick, see? And I used to cook separate meals for him.
Like an ulcer?
Something like ulcers, yeah. So for a while, so here and there. Then later on, my brother, like I told you, he put me on Humboldt Boulevard near Armitage, and I lived there with the two children. It's Marvin and Sylvia. So one Saturday, see, my brother used to always spend time with my mother. Every Saturday he used to go to her. And he'd spend the afternoon, this and that. And then one Saturday, we lost the money on the house. We couldn't get nothing out of that, you know. And I was partners with one of my younger brother older than me. And somehow I had a sister-in-law, she was very stubborn. And we invested almost $5,000, and we couldn't keep her up the payments. We had to pay $90 a month to keep up all the payments, and the depression came in. My husband couldn't get no job or things like that. So my brother came over to me and he says, no, so my brother came to my mother, and she says, you know, Harry, his name was in English, Harry. She says, how would you like to help out? Pretty much, that's my Jewish name, Maui. And he says, well, what do you think? So I lived on Humboldt Boulevard at that time. And he said to, my mother said to him, you know, my name is Maui. He said, Maui's a very nice woman, and she's a good mother, but it was too hard for him to get a job because he had to give up the place where he worked. You know, depression was coming in. Depression first came in was in 1924, 25, I remember when my daughter was born in October the 13th. I think it was 1926. That's right. So she says, you know, Molly, I would like you to give them a hand, the nice kids, my husband and Molly. And she said, Dave and Molly get along fine. Wouldn't you like to see that they can get a little business, because they're both tailors? You see, my husband had to give up his shop. because he was sick, his ulcerated stomach, so he couldn't attend. So he said, he came over to me one Sunday, and he says, "Where's my husband?" I said, "Well, he went off. In the meantime, they stole our car. We used to have all the Ford, small Ford." So he said, "Where's David?" I said, "Well, he's going around. What are you doing?" I said, "Nothing much. He's trying to collect the insurance, the car what you lost. You understand?"